dude, I'm so tired. It's bad.
Oh my god, no. You and me both.
Yeah.
Is there something that we have to do today?
I think the podcast. I think we have to intro it first before we can actually like do it though.
Oh.
But okay. I think that starts off with some like, what's going on, Titans? Welcome back to another episode of Daily Titan Podcast, or DT Pod for short. In today's episode, we're going to be breaking down volume 118, issue number 9 of the Daily Titan student newspaper. If you're curious about what's going to be in this episode, we're going to cover a couple of stories, including our top story about No King's protest that happened here in Orange County. We're also going to be covering a Dabka dance troupe that came to campus and visited for a little workshop. We're also going to be going over an opinion on censorship, and we're going to wrap it up talking about men's soccer and some updates with them. Stay tuned for the podcast, Titans, and before I forget to mention, I'm one of your co-hosts, Kabir Kansari, your layout editor, and I'm joined with
Damiana Gabriel, news assistant editor and co-host. For our top story of the week, writers Sacha Chibe and Leah Kornberg covered No King's protests that occurred on Saturday across Orange County. Here to talk with us today is editor-in-chief Jaden Lovelady.
Hello, good to be back. Missed y'all.
I heard that you were also at a No King's protest.
I was, actually.
What city?
Yeah.
That would be the capital, Washington, D.C. Oh, yeah.
No way.
My God, tell us about that.
Yes. So, me and 5 other Daily Titan editors actually went to a conference that happened to be in Washington, D.C. And the last day we were there was, like, No King's Day. And, yeah, it was really cool just because, you know, like, I mean, this is history. This is the largest organized protest in American history. Absolutely. So it was just really cool. We wanted to see it, especially given, like, you know, like 2 days before, a ton of reporters walked out of the White House for not signing what I consider to be, like, unjust expectations, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. As a student journalist, it was just, like, surreal to witness and be like, wow, this is crazy. But it was, I don't know, it was kind of endearing to see, like, so many people get out and, like, you know, voice their concerns and, like, I don't know. It's always cool to witness and, like, feel the energy of something like that.
Yeah.
And
definitely. Like, there's a lot of gravity behind a moment like that.
Yeah, yeah. Especially
No, you're all good. I was just going to say, like, there's a lot of gravity behind those moments, especially when everyone kind of comes in or comes out to these events with their own sort of, like, ideas in mind about what makes it important to them to be there.
Yeah.
I think, historically, both with this No King's Day, the last No King's Day, and then there have been, like, smaller protests up, like, No King's protests since. It's just been kind of, like, a wide umbrella of, like, issues that people are, like, coming out to protest, and I think it's really interesting because it does bring out, like, a really, like, wide and diverse, like, demographic of people who just, like, are coming out to, like, protest issues that matter to them.
I think that also rings true in the protests that were covered in our story, like, here in Orange County. I think it was just really cool to, like, look for, or, like, look through the photos on the editorial side when we're picking, like, which photos go in print and stuff. It was really cool because, like, every photo showcased, like, a different, like, a member of a different community.
Yeah.
And I think it was really, like, cool to see. I don't know. Like, the protests I've been to, just covering and also, like, I don't know. I lived in a busy city, so, you know, you see them in your life. But, like, it's usually, like, one demographic fighting for one thing, which is a beautiful thing, too. But this is such a, like, wide umbrella, like you were saying. It's cool to see so many people come together in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be for anything. I think that's just, you know, a cool thing, and it's
and I think this story specifically, our writers, like, went to a La Habra protest and then a protest in Santa Ana, and there was, like we said before, like, a really diverse group of people that were at these protests. We had people who were, like, in the military, we had council members, we had just, like, longtime residents of these cities who were all, like, talking about issues that, like, were important to them, and these, like, ranged from just, like, government overreach to, like, attacks on healthcare, immigration, like, concern over deportation, like, an increase in deportation.
Yeah.
And there were also quotes within these articles that sort of showcased, like, how much it means to have these different community members be a part of these protests. Like, there was one quote from the article that was talking about how it was nice to see young people out there. Because it shows that young people also still care about, like, protecting our democracy and, like, making sure that we can progress through what we have already dealt with.
Absolutely. I think, regardless of what people are marching or protesting for on either political side, I think the fact that people can still come together and fight for their, what they believe is right, and, like, to still exercise liberty in the United States is a very beautiful thing. And I think, yeah, I don't know. This protest specifically just highlighted it to me. But also I'm biased. Hey, I was at the big one in Washington, D.C., so I was a little bit affected by that. But It's just really cool. And I really, there's a quote in this story that I really loved. I'm trying to pull up. It was Noelle Campbell, one of the lead organizers with 50501OC. I don't know if that's how you say their name, but they said, joy is also a form of resistance, and that's what we need when we're in tough times like this. We still need to find joy within each other. And I don't know, that's just really, I liked how human this seems.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I can't quite find the words for what I'm trying to describe.
I think it's a sort of indescribable, like, sort of sentiment. But it's also something that I think is very visible. Like, in seeing other images of other protests from other cities and things like that, there's a level of joy and togetherness that's being displayed. Like, with people either walking together hand in hand or things like that. There's a sort of, like,
And then, I think, sorry to cut you off. No, but I think just, like, in general, you can let me know if it was, like, different from, like, the protests that you were at. But, like, and, like, kind of looking at the photos, like, listening to the recordings, like, from these protests, it kind of was a joyful experience. Like, I think that's a good word that encapsulates it. Like, people were, like, chanting together. They were playing music. People were, like, dancing at these protests. It was just kind of, like, I don't know. People were, like, finding happiness in going out to protest for these issues that might.
I think it's definitely something has to be said for the fact that, like, there were no police interactions at the ones, at least the two covered in here, which was La Habra and Orange. But as far as I know, I think only one person was arrested in New York City's too. I mean, it was just, like, across the board, it just...
Yeah.
Coming off of the energy from, you know, the LA protests this summer, it's refreshing to see, like, such a large protest be handled in a way that didn't have to end, like, pushing boundaries of, like, safety concerns and stuff like that.
And then another thing that was shortly mentioned in this article was the lawsuit that Fullerton decided to join. It's Vasquez Perdomo v. Nome. And then we reported about it briefly, like, a couple weeks ago, but there was a Santa Ana council member present at this protest who actually kind of was the force behind urging Santa Ana to, like, join the lawsuit, in his words.
Yeah, the lawsuit, I know that Irvine, Anaheim, Fullerton, and a lot of other cities, honestly, are, you know, putting efforts towards the lawsuit, but this is detailed in the story, but it challenges the handlings of deportations, racial discriminations, arrests without warrants, and inhumane housing, all to do with ICE and, you know, the mass deportation crisis happening right now in our nation. But it is said in the story that it's trying to uphold the continuity of the Fourth Amendment and due process. And I think it's just, like, interesting in a time like this where, like, I know this is a big thing going on in Orange County to, like, have protests like this that provide that sense of community. I know we were talking about that earlier of, like...
Yeah, and then I think specifically, like, in Orange County or, like, even more locally, like, on this campus, we've seen, like, a wide array of people, like, using their First Amendment rights to, like, kind of engage with their own community members. And this has been an effort that's been seen, like, across the board, like, across the political spectrum. We've had... not just this semester, but in past semesters, we've had, like, pro-Palestine rallies. We've had No Kings protest rallies, not on campus, but just, like, around the area.
Yeah, in Orange County.
This semester, we recently also had Turning Point USA host kind of a large event. And a lot of the things that we have seen, both from these two protests, and I think from what you've seen, like, when you went to the No Kings protest in D.C., like, it's just kind of, like, it's shown a lot about the current political landscape a little bit, but, and I think it's something that's very interesting to keep in mind for the future. But thank you so much for coming and visiting. Ugh,
thanks
tonight.
For having me. Very
loved
interesting
hearing about your experiences.
Thank you.
Oh wow, yes, first word in the whole segment. Well, see y'all later.
Well, goodbye.
Bye-bye. All right, we're gonna sidestep on over to lifestyle now. We're gonna talk about a recent dance workshop that took place on campus. This was actually a workshop hosted by both the Swana Club and Swana Resource Center on campus.
This is crazy. What did they do?
So they actually did a Dabka. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Okay. They actually did a Dabka dance workshop where they brought in a Palestinian dance troupe to come and teach a basic routine and a couple of other steps to students that were interested in learning. And the Palestinian dance troupe El Fanoun came in to teach to both staff and students whether or not they were part of Swana.
I think that's really cool. I think... personally, maybe I'm a little bit biased on this, but I really love it when people like learn more about Middle Eastern culture. I think it's like a really rich history. There is a quote in the story that kind of like discusses the history of the Debka dance, which is like a Palestinian dance. It was by Reem Juda, and a dancer from the Elfenen like dance group. And according to Juda, Debka wasn't started by professional dancers. It like originated from like the farmers in the region who were just kind of like dancing together and like working together, and it just kind of like evolved into like this cultural thing. And I feel like that's really cool.
Definitely. I think with a lot of these sort of like very significant cultural moments and movements, especially when it comes to dance, they're not started from the idea of wanting to dance. They're started from the idea of just wanting to bond with people, wanting to sort of create that connection, sort of like be one with others around you. And I think that's sort of something that was really demonstrated by Elfenen sort of teaching to people, because they didn't care whether or not they were SWANA students or whether or not they were part of the collective or anything like that. They just wanted people to learn and be knowledgeable and sort of enjoy what they get to enjoy every day.
Absolutely. And I think that's really beautiful.
Definitely.
It's a really cool event started by like the Southwest Asian North African Club, SWANA, and the Resource Center, which is also like new on campus, or like newer compared to the other like Dirk centers.
And on the topic of the actual center, the event was also partially organized by Nadia Al-Said, who is a SWANA resource coordinator. And she also talked in the article a little bit about how this gave her a way to sort of bond with her own Palestinian heritage and sort of reflect on that as well. And she said it was like a different way to associate their identity, because normally like with Palestinians being associated with like a level of trauma across the world and things like that, it was a new way to share joy as a Palestinian, in her words, which I think was really beautiful, like as a quote, because it shows that there's so much depth to any culture in the world, and for it to be shared in a way that not only helps others become knowledgeable about that culture, but also helps those that are a part of it sort of heal and remember the best parts of their culture together. Like, absolutely. I think it's a very beautiful sentiment.
Yeah, I thought that was like a really like different or like interesting angle that the story took, and like talking about just why like kind of remembering those kind of lighter, like kind of more cherished aspects of like your culture, like especially like during times of hardship, and especially like kind of spreading that education as opposed to like kind of letting the news write your culture for you. I think it's really cool.
Definitely. Definitely. Do you have a cultural dance that you know or that you want to know that you would love to see a workshop for on campus?
I'm Egyptian. We've got belly dancing.
Okay.
Belly dancing. That's baller. Workshop would kind of go crazy. I don't know.
That would go crazy.
I personally, I'm a really big fan of spreading this agenda, and I really hope to just be walking on campus and just hear Arabic music playing all the time.
Well, this could actually happen.
Titan Radio,
they can make that happen.
No, I'm going to get in touch with Titan Radio to actually have this happen. This is really important for me personally. What about you? Would you say that there's like a cultural dance that workshop that you're really...
I think it already happens. I'm pretty sure that ISA, Indian Student Association, I'm pretty sure they already do Bhangra workshops. I just need to go to more of them. Yeah. But if we was doing like mass Bhangra workshops on campus, that'd be super fire. I'd be really into that.
That would be really great. I think we should get on that.
We should get on that.
I agree.
Okay, but we can't get on that if we keep this segment going, so I think we just have to end it here so we can get on that.
You're so wise. Oh my god.
I try my best. Okay, we'll cut it now.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey Titans! I know you missed me, I'm back again. It's Jaden Lovelady, the editor-in-chief of The Daily Titan, and I'm here to tell you to stay connected and follow us at The Daily Titan on social media. Be sure to pick up a paper on campus in the orange newsstands, and if you want more stories, check us out online.
You know, I have an opinion I want to share.
And what would that be?
I can't tell you, I'm being censored about it.
By who?
I can't tell you, that's part of censorship. But you know what I can tell you is that someone else wrote an opinion for Daily Titan this week, and that would be Leah Korenberg, who also wrote part of the No King story.
I know, second appearance by Leah.
I know, in the same week. What a baller staff writer.
Right.
Yes, and in this opinion, she actually talks about cancel culture and the use of censorship in partnership with that.
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting article. It, like you said, it particularly talked about like cancel culture, like used as a medium to censor people's opinions. Leah talked about how it was used like on both sides of the political spectrum. I thought it was interesting that she made the distinction that it's used like socially by the left and politically by the right.
That was another thing that really kind of stuck out to me in the article, especially when she sort of redefined what that meant and sort of explained like how that sort of looks. Yeah, and that really stuck out to me in the way she sort of referred to the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, in this article, talking about how they're supposed to be an independent agency, but like, with the whole censorship of Jimmy Kimmel's show through ABC,
yeah,
it appeared that the FCC, who was supposed to be independent, became a sort of politicized organization in this case specifically.
Yeah. And she talked about, like, other kind of more traditional means of censorship, like book bans in specific. Yeah, and then she talked about kind of more traditional means of censorship that not typically the government uses, but that, like, can be observed, like, throughout the country, specifically book bans, which I think is really important, seeing as, like, Banned Books Week just wrapped.
Yeah.
And then another interesting part of the article that I thought was personally really insightful was kind of the action that consumers can take to combat this censorship, specifically by using money, like, by using their money or spending their money wisely, right, in places that they believe are, like, upholding the, like, freedoms of speech that they should be.
Right, using their dollar or not using their dollar, and, like, the power of what that dollar means. Like, right. How a lot of people canceled their Hulu and Disney Plus subscriptions, mm-hmm, after this.
Yeah.
And in response, because of that, they brought Jimmy Kimmel back on air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's a really powerful means of protest.
It's a really historic one, too. Like,
yeah.
There's been a lot of stuff, like the Montgomery bus boycotts, things, mm-hmm, like that. Like, all these movements in the past have used the dollar as a sort of central nature of power in order to make people's voices and thoughts heard.
Yeah, I think that, like, when there is, like, a collective enough effort to boycott, like, something specific, it really, like, actually is a very effective means of, like, sending the message that a certain, like, group wants to send across to, like...
Absolutely, especially when these protests are aimed not at peers, but at larger organizations, mm-hmm, or people that are in a sort of sense of authority that is built upon a dollar. Like with these large media conglomerations that are built upon, like, a dollar or built upon profit. Being able to take away their ability to profit or the ability for them to create as big of a margin as they can, mm-hmm, sends a much stronger message than just, like, tweeting something on social media.
Yeah, and then I think moving away from the just, like, corporate aspect of it, I know a big part of this article was how certain political figures, like, in the example of Jimmy Kimmel, that would be, like, President Trump, are, like, kind of weaponizing commissions such as the FCC, like, as a tool for censorship. And, like, I think it's fair to say that this has been kind of a recurring pattern of, like, the current administration kind of trying to use their authority in a way to kind of, like, shift.
In a way, it's sort of the weaponization of independent organizations, mm-hmm, that are meant to sort of keep a check and balance between these sort of things. Overall, I think that this article really coincides with just a lot of the political landscape that we're seeing.
Yeah.
In that, you know, using your voice, while it's important to do, can also be sort of dangerous at times, depending on who's listening.
Mm-hmm.
But it shouldn't shy people away from being able to exercise their voice. And also, in making sure their voice is heard through means that aren't just vocal. You know, it's not just about what you say, it's about how you go about saying what you say.
Yeah.
In the same way people use their dollars to sort of make their sentiment known about these kinds of issues and how, mm-hmm, they feel about them.
I agree. I think it also kind of asks its reader to have kind of just a larger sense of understanding for people just, like, across the spectrum, and to kind of, I guess, try not to use cancel culture as a means of, like, censoring, like, their opinion. And I think that kind of promotion of, like, diverse conversation that from, like, sides that might not necessarily agree with each other is also an important thing to elevate.
Definitely, because cancel culture, at the end of the day, it is still something that is very effective. But if it's used on anything and everyone just because of one person's reasonings, it loses that sort of value that it could have when a collective is kind of behind the idea of what should be decided.
I think that was... You said that in a great way. Beautifully said, even.
Thank you. I'm glad I got to say it.
I'm so glad you also got to say it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well then, I think we should move on now. So.
Yeah. Kicking it over to the sports desk, CSUF men's soccer recently had a win against Cal State Bakersfield, and you can read more about that in the article by Zach Globerdans.
Yeah, so not only did this mark another win for Cal State Fullerton's men's soccer team, but there are also a couple of personal highlights in this one as well, mm-hmm, namely in the headline as well. Mario Carlos had a hat trick in this game, scoring three goals of his own.
Two of those being in the first half.
Exactly, coming out to a bit of an early start with a lot of momentum. And not only did this win just contribute to Fullerton's overall morale and momentum in the, mm-hmm, season, but it also secured them the number one position in the Big West rankings with a 4-1-1 conference record. That would be 4 wins, 1 loss, and 1 tie overall in the conference. And as in accordance to their whole season, they have a 7-4-5 overall record as well.
Yeah, and I think kind of along the same topic, men's soccer, like you were saying, has been doing great this season. I think specifically in the game against Cal State Bakersfield, not only did we have that lead in actual, like, points scored, but we were also leading in just, like, overall shoots in general. Like, we outshot Cal State Bakersfield 17-10.
Yeah, no, a big margin on that as well. And the defense was also highlighted in this game, considering the early lead Fullerton got out to with the hat trick off of Mr. Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
They also had to defend that sort of lead as well. So playing a lot of defense helped keep this lead up and help them get a solid score of 5-2. You know, a really big gap in there.
Yeah.
And on the topic of Mario Carlos's hat trick, this is also the first time there's been a hat trick on the Cal State Fullerton men's soccer team in over a year, with the last one coming at the hands of Eric Serrano in September of 2024 against Utah Tech.
My God. How groundbreaking.
I know. A whole year, whole nother guy, but still a win in Fullerton's books.
Ooh, hats off, even.
Hats off. Because you got to take your hat off to pull a hat trick out the bag.
Oh, that's good. We should get you on that field.
No, they don't want to see me out there.
Oh.
They don't want to see me out there.
Yeah.
But they do want to see you at their next game. And mm-hmm. the Titans' next game is going to be against Cal State Northridge on Wednesday night. And the kickoff there is scheduled for 7 p.m.
Right.
Right.
Will you be there?
Hopefully. We'll have to find out. They might need me on the field, so I'll come with my jersey.
They might need you on that field.
Yeah.
Right. And that's it for this week's episode of DT Pod. Be sure to pick up a copy of The Daily Titan on campus or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the stories mentioned in today's episode. Thank you all for listening, and as always, if you like us, we love you.
Whoa, 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 Titans. Don't go anywhere just yet, because you know we got something real important we need to handle right now. We need to get thankful immediately. So before we end this episode, you know we got to give a big thank you to everyone that helps out at Daily Titan staff to make sure that this podcast is possible. So we're going to first start that off with a thank you to our executive producers, Sergio Gonzalez and Jaden Lovelady. We're going to follow that one up with another thank you to our producer, Michelle King. And then we're going to follow that one up with another thank you going out to our assistant producers, Giselle Medina and Raniel Santos. We're also going to throw another thank you in there for Bijan Schuster-Risade, who provides all the music you hear in this episode. And we're going to throw the biggest thank you we possibly can at everyone that tuned in to this week's episode and kept in touch with Daily Titan. Please make sure you keep listening to the podcast, pick up a copy of the broadsheet out on campus when you're walking around, and also tap in on dailytitan.com to read any of the articles mentioned and more. We love you guys. We'll see you guys next week. Stay tuned. Peace.